Welcome to Corner of the Galaxy, the show that talks 100% LA Galaxy soccer. We're glad you could join us. Now it's time to sit back and relax as your hosts navigate through the twisting, turning, but never boring world of the five-time MLS Cup champion, LA Galaxy. And now, here are your hosts, Josh Guessman and Wendy Thomas.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Corner of the Galaxy on cornerofthegalaxy.com and coming to you live on a Wednesday night. This is August 16th, not a Thursday. Normally Thursdays, no Thursday shows for us this week as we have a short week. The LA Galaxy don't have a game, and I'm super busy on Thursday. So a little Wednesday night show for everybody won't kill anybody, but we have a bunch to talk about. Obviously, the LA Galaxy losing to New York City FC 2-0. We'll touch on that. Some highlights are really the things that interested us from that match. We're also going to take a look at the LA Galaxy and any news that has come out, including updates on Yella Von Dom. And with no game, we're going to go over some emails that you've sent in, and hopefully we have some good discussions along the way. But before we get to any of that, let's check in with Miss Wendy Thomas, who this time is calling in from the phone because, of course, technical difficulties on a Wednesday night. Right, Wendy?
Yeah, I know. I have to apologize listening audience that for whatever reason my MacBook is not cooperating, and so I'm actually calling in by my cell phone.
Yeah, so instead now you just get to have like an hour-long phone call instead of, you know, being nice and relaxed with like nice audio in your hair in your ears and all that stuff, right?
Yeah, I am not a technological wizard, and so when things go wrong, I usually get Josh on the phone and say, Josh, what's happening? And then he has to walk me through it without even having my computer in front of him by saying, okay, go to Skype, okay, go to preferences, go to audiovisual. Okay, what does it say? Because I'm a bit of a, I'm not a Luddite, but I'm certainly, I don't have the expertise in AV equipment that Josh does. And so I promised him that I'm going to put my boyfriend in charge of this so that he will fix it.
That's right. That's where we'll put Christian on it. That's a good idea. In fact, he's the most technically advanced of all of us. So that's a perfect thing to do. Yeah. But no, the LA Galaxy lose 2-0 to the New York City FC. Siggy Schmidt said after the game, the LA Galaxy didn't deserve to lose the game. A lot of the guys in the locker room felt the same way. I can certainly understand the way they felt, Wendy, but what did you think of this game?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, at this point in the season, there's a certain percentage of the fan base that has essentially written off the season and is saying, like, let's look forward. Let's look to the future. Forget about 2017 is experiment. We're gonna write it off. And then there's probably another part of the fan base which is saying that there's still a chance. We could still make the playoffs technically, mathematically. You know, as long as there is an arithmetic possibility, I don't think that they're going to give it up. And so I really don't fall on one side of the fence or the other. I think that both sets of fan bases have valid points to make. One is that you should never give up. And the other is that realistically, there's nothing really wrong with looking at the season and saying, like, you know what, odds are we're not going to make it. So let's just try the ways that we can prepare ourselves for next year and not make the same mistakes twice, because making a mistake, there's nothing wrong with making a mistake. Making the same mistake over and over is something that is kind of unforgivable, particularly in professional sports.
Yeah. I was going over some stuff today and I was saying, you know, hey, good decisions cost a lot of money. I go, but bad decisions cost way more money. And so, you know, if you're looking at the LA Galaxy and you're worried at any point about cost saving, then make good decisions, because good decisions are going to cost you less money than bad decisions. Even if you decide to spend $10 million on a player, that's a good decision if you make it the right way. So, you know, that's sort of my focus and how you look at some of these things. I will tell you that the guys over at 538.com, their number crunching group, did the probabilities of the LA Galaxy making the playoffs. They currently have the LA Galaxy listed at a 5% chance of making the playoffs. I tweeted that out and, of course, got 13 or 14 different GIFs back with so you're saying there's a chance, right?
Yeah, that's saying there's a chance.
That's exactly what it is. Dumb and dumber straight through, so you're saying there's a chance. That's what it was.
Well, yeah, there is a mathematical chance. I mean, I really have a lot of sympathy for fans. I have a lot of sympathy for players who've really played their hardest this year. My heart goes out to players like Allison Drini. This is his first year in MLS. He had no idea what he was walking into. And certainly based on the Galaxy's experience, one would never expect that he was walking into a firestorm,
right?
An absolute firestorm in terms of what this season has been like. Similarly, Ashley Cole, every single game, he plays his heart out. He just puts 100% into the game. You know, Emma Boateng off the bench over and over, just, you know, putting it on a ton of effort. And you really feel sorry for players like that and for the fans who want to go and they just want to bring their kids and have some fun and watch a game. And yet they're constantly being exposed to, you know, poor judgment by the front office and probably some lackadaisical effort on the part of at least a few players.
Yeah, it seems that way. And even, you know, I think that there is a tendency to see, you know, what is happening, and you certainly see the guys who are laying it all on the line. And in some cases, I'm almost, you know, you look at somebody like Ramon Alessandrini, who is a guy who gives like over and above, and you almost need to see him stretchered off after every game from just sheer exhaustion.
You're almost like,
hey, Ramon, just shut it down, dude. Just shut it down. All right. I know you're trying and I appreciate it. That's great. But you're going to be here next season. We need to make sure you don't blow out a kneecap or something whenever you're going like 130% into a tackle, where like everybody else is just sort of like, hey, you know, this game is over. But that's not what I saw against New York City FC, Wendy. I saw 50 minutes roughly of excellent LA Galaxy soccer in terms of they looked the more dangerous team. The passing was actually pretty good. They dominated possession overall in the game. Dominated for the LA Galaxy right now. That's like an almost 10% swing. So, you know, almost a 60-40. It wasn't quite there, but almost 60-40. You know, they dominated on shots, 21 shots on goal. They are 21 shots, 5 shots on goal, which for them is like, oh my God, they suddenly learned how to shoot the ball at something. I mean, and then Sean Johnson stands on his head and has, you know, realistically, he made 2 or 3 ridiculous saves that should have been goals. I mean, it's not hard to sit here and say, hey, I saw it, you know, and talking to the players afterwards, we were asking questions as reporters and we were sort of almost had to say, yeah, we saw it. We saw what you guys did, but it didn't go in the net. And Siggy Schmidt's response after the game, Wendy, was, you know, for all of the criticism or perhaps it was warranted. I'm not saying it's not warranted, but all the criticism Cardinolfo got, one of the biggest things that people criticized him for was the fact that he always seemed to be trying to sugarcoat things, or, you know, hey, I'm not going to throw anybody under the bus type thing, right? And Siggy Schmidt decided to just throw people under the bus in this. So it was fine. Jossie Zardes got thrown under the bus. Brian Rowe got thrown under the bus. Now, Siggy's good. He, like, sometimes he lets the front wheels of the bus hit you, but he pulls you out from underneath before the back wheels hit you. So that's what he did to Brian Rowe. He let the front wheels hit him, pull him back, and then was like, okay, you're okay, Brian. But with Jossie Zardes, go ahead.
Well, how effective was it, though, when Cardinolfo was saying things like, well, we really should be winning games. You know, it's just inexplicable. And, you know, yeah, I mean, who could have predicted all these injuries, and who could have predicted that it had players going to for national team appearances? I mean, first of all, you know, that's something that a coach is, you know, has to expect. And second of all, did that work? Was saying that, gosh, I just, you know, there's no reason why we should be losing that game. Did that work for Cardinolfo? Did that work for the LA Galaxy? If it didn't work, then doesn't it make sense that maybe Ziggy is trying something else and saying, listen, maybe there's parts of this team that don't work, that aren't working the way they should. We should identify why and figure out if we can't fix these players and how they're working or how they're playing, then maybe it's time for them to find greener pastures elsewhere.
Well, I mean, I think that there is something to that. I also think that it's Siggy Schmidt, and he's one of the most tenured, you know, coaches in Major League Soccer history, the all-time winningest coach in Major League Soccer history. He's a guy who's been around the block and has been, you know, coaching through ASO and UCLA in the 1980s here in Southern California. The guy has tremendous amounts of experience, and he knows that he can throw professional players into the path of some criticism on chance. And I just never felt like Cardinolfo, even at LA Galaxy 2, he didn't like to criticize guys. So it's not even that, oh, he went up to the big leagues and, you know, no, now he can't criticize people. It was that he was scared to. I just think that that's sort of the coach and the way he is. But with Siggy, that's not the way. That's not the way. And Siggy's has no problem doing it. And I think, and Kevin has pointed this out on our Monday shows, but it seems like the players were almost, they were expecting that, Wendy. They were expecting to get thrown under the bus sometimes. They were expecting accountability, because that's what Siggy's providing here, is a little bit of accountability.
Yeah, and also, I mean, bring some attention to what Ziggy is saying, what are we going to do with Jossie Zardes? What are we going to do?
Nope.
What are, like, Walk me through it. Explain to me, what are the steps? How do we turn? How do we make him successful? What do we do?
There was a there's certainly a theory around that. If you look at Giassi's artist and when he was productive, which was 2014. Let's just look at 2014. Mm-hmm. 2013, he launched every ball he had basically almost out of the stadium. Couldn't find the net. And in 2014, he found all those that he launched into the stadium. They all found the back of the net. And you know, he had, I think, 14 or 16 goals through the entire season. He was super successful. And if you look at the people who were paired around him, I think that's where you really need to look right now. You need to look at guys like Landon Donovan and Robbie Keane, who were the sort of the driving forces of Giassi's artist, finishing balls and putting them into the net. Giassi Zardes, and this isn't a criticism that I think is unfair, or it's not one that doesn't fall within the purview of the entire league, which is that, you know, Giassi Zardes is not a creator. He's never been a creator. Maybe he can put in a cross from the outside whenever he's playing on the outside, and maybe that is his best position, is playing him on the outside and letting those crosses and giving him more time, you know, running forward instead of having to play sort of this striker role. But regardless of how that is, Giassi Zardes does not create chances. And he's not one. And there are a bunch of strikers in Major League Soccer, Wendy, who don't create chances and that they can still be really good. So then it's, if he's not going to create, then who are the creators around him? And so whenever you had 2014, you had Robbie Keane, you had Landon Donovan. Those were the creators. That was obvious, right? You even had David Beckham in there as well. All creators of chances. Who's the creator of chances right now? It's probably Roman Alessandrini, and it's supposed to be Gio. And it's probably now that Jonathan Dos Santos is in there, maybe it's some of Jonah. Jonah's going to be that quarterbacking guy. Box to box is going to create chances as well. You know,
I think if Legette was healthy, he could.
Okay, so there's a creator too. So, and he's not on the team either. But you look at who's supposed to do this. Now, Roman is basically, has been playing a lot where he's on one side and Jossie's on the other side. So you're not going to find a link up there. And whenever Jossie does play in the striker position, let's face it, he hasn't been good. And that's the other part of this, is that he hasn't been good and the LA Galaxy have not created chances. And that goes to show you, I mean, across all the strikers, it doesn't matter who you name on this team, they have not had many chances to finish. And when they have had those chances, they have missed them. And that's where it sort of comes.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's nice. I think that it's true. It's certainly, it's accurate that Giassi Zardes is not a creative player and he primarily should function. You know, his assets are really his work rate and his athleticism. But since he's been injured, he has not been able to capitalize on his assets to the extent that the fans would like, because he's not been at 100%. And when you see him not at 100%, you realize how important things like his fitness, his athleticism, his work ethic are, and what a crucial role they play, because if he's not creative and you essentially realize that he is only going to be successful when surrounded with players who are extremely creative, who have a lot of skill, and, you know, who have better vision, then you have to realize, is that something that we can implement on this team? Can we be successful without a creative striker? Is that something that we want going forward? Is that something that Ziggy wants going forward? Or is that something that we realistically can't be successful if that's the case? Because it's true that he's not creative. He's never going to be creative. If he improves, though, if he just gets back to the fitness levels that he was in mid-2015 when he was playing game after game after game after game for the U.S. men's national team, maybe he can be successful. But I watched the game, and to me it was not merely an issue of him not creating. It looked to me like he was like falling over balls and just, I mean, his passing was wonky. It was very odd. And so there's something else, I think, beyond just the fact that he's a limited creator, which has always been the case.
Right. No, and you're right. But here's the other thing is, I think that a lot of the LA Galaxy front office, and quite honestly, a lot of fans and reporters as well, have lived off the fact that we've all seen Giassi's artists be successful. And we've seen him do it in 2014. And then he even had the U.S. men's national team, you know, call-ups in 2015, 2016, I think, is whenever he really kicked off with the U.S. men's national team. And you see that he has success there. And it's not the same sort of success. It's not the goal-scoring success, but it's the competitive success that he had, you know, throughout the end of 2015, 2016 with the U.S. men's national team. So you saw those things, and you said, okay, well, it's just a matter of him getting back to where he was. And I think that after the injury, and certainly I think the injury has had a mental toll, if not a physical toll, on him, it just hasn't been the same, and it hasn't been rebounded, and you know, there's lots of things. And here, I'll get to an email that we have from Jo Beth, because she actually touches on Jossie's artists. And so it's sort of the perfect way to talk about this a little bit more. She first talks about Roman Alessandrini. So let's hear it is from Jo Beth. She says, after the game tonight, she wrote in after the New York City game, she said, Alessandrini came up to some kids who sit next near me and took a picture with them. He was very gracious and sweet, but after the picture, he abruptly left, and it was obvious that he was frustrated. Alessandrini, Cole, and Boateng all work so hard and feel for them, and I feel for them after every loss. I know others work hard too. There are other players that I admire, but these three are noticeably the hardest working players on the field and create chances during every game. I agree with that, by the way, so far. Here is the second part. She goes, and I hate to keep picking on Giassi's artists, and I even told Wendy beforehand, I feel like we're beating a dead horse here, but this is something that's important, and we didn't see it, you know, fixed against New York City FC. She says, I hate to keep picking on Giassi's artists, but why is he constantly being played for 90 minutes every game? What kind of magical hold does he have over management? I am so sick of watching him fail to put the ball in the back of the net. I'm tired of watching him not be able to receive a pass and then just give the ball away. Why not start another striker, even Jack McInerney, who I thought did a solid job in Portland, deserves another shot at starting? No, he didn't finish chances, but he hasn't been given a consistent shot at minutes. I would trust him over Zardes. I don't understand why Siggy didn't bring on another striker earlier. Bradford Jameson IV should have come on earlier, and I'm not sure why he can't replace Zardes. She said this game was especially disappointing compared to the recent ones. I just thought we had a shot at winning this after, excuse me, and after the first half, I let myself believe we could. We need a striker. We need a striker. We need a striker. Thanks. Keep up the wonderful work you do, Jo Beth. So,
oh,
Jo Beth. I love Jo Beth, and every once in a while I see her in the stadium, so she's amazing. But no, I mean, she has some points here. First of all, Emmanuel Boateng had, I thought, was the man of the match and wasn't even close in this particular game. I thought that Alessandrini was missing his last touch, like, really, you know, he couldn't find anything. He couldn't find the net. He couldn't find a lot of things. His one cross that almost went in was accidental. You know, so, and that's sort of the ups and downs. And I think in one of Kevin's articles, he says that Alessandrini hasn't scored since, you know, like maybe the end of June, I want to say. I mean, that's a long time too. So you're looking at all these things. The Galaxy aren't scoring goals, which is another issue that, you know, it continues to sort of replicate itself. But you look at it, Zardes not playing 90 minutes. There's arguments for and against playing Zardes and continuing to play Zardes. What do you think,
Wendy? I remember when about a year ago, I came upon some branding materials from the LA Galaxy that it was discussing. It was marketing materials, I think, or materials that had been designed to for advertisers and people when they're displaying the LA Galaxy logo. And I remember that the descriptions were so specific such that every element of the crest of the LA Galaxy, the color palette that was to be used, was down to the very pixel of what color should be used. And I remember thinking to myself, this is a company, this is an institution, this is a team that cares tremendously about branding. Mm-hmm. That really is, it is a sports team, but it's also in Los Angeles. And so it's hyper aware of how to brand itself and the fact that it wants to brand itself to be successful. And I know that on some level, management somewhere along the way decided that Jesse's artist is a homegrown player, and he's very appealing in terms of, you know, how he could be advertised, because he's a very kind person. He's a wonderful person, deeply religious, a man of family, a man of faith, a hometown hero, all those things that I think they decided that this is, could be someone who is a franchise player for the LA Galaxy and who stays with us for years and years.
Right.
He's someone that we could build the team around. He's a face, and he's an identity that we can be proud of, and we can market to sponsors and to our fans. And I think that that's so tantalizing to them. The idea, the idea of having a talismanic homegrown player that you could sell to sponsors and audiences is something that they want to latch onto so badly that it's very difficult to set aside the fact that maybe in this particular instance, this player is having problems that are not being fixed. And they don't, it's a difficult thing when you have a business concept of something that you want to do to make the team successful. And that is running up against or butting heads with the concept of, you know, sporting from a sporting perspective, whether it works, you know, in terms of achieving success in the field.
Right.
And so I think that in some ways the team had the idea, like when they said, this is a year for Jesse Zurdis, this is a year for Sebastian Legette, this is a year for Giovanni Dos Santos, you know, they're thinking like, these are all players that we can create a real successful brand and operation around. And it just hasn't worked out, not for necessarily reasons that are their fault. I mean, Sebastian Legette was hurt in a game and he hasn't played for 6 months. No one could have predicted that, but it did happen. And so, you know, and my boss used to say that, you know, pigs get fat, hogs get slaughtered.
Right.
And when something goes wrong, you have to adjust. You have to change things. You have to turn things around when they start looks like it's going one way. And in this case, you know, Jesse's not working, and as much as he is tempting from a sponsorship perspective, marketing and all those things, we have to fix the soccer side of things, I think.
Yeah, you certainly do. You bring up a great point because, you know, I would argue that the LA Galaxy, that Jesse Zurdis, even in his current state, is more valuable to the LA Galaxy than really anything that they could probably get for him. And even with the on-field production, it's one of the reasons that he's never moved, Wendy, is I don't think the Galaxy ever felt like they would get a, you know, like value for what they thought, and they certainly didn't want to sell early, even though after 2014 would have been a wonderful time to do it. But could you imagine the outcry from LA Galaxy fans if they would have traded him in 2015? After he scores all those goals in 2014, LA Galaxy win an MLS Cup, they get an offer for him and they sell him because he's the homegrown guy.
I mean, it would have been an outcry, but the thing is that players are like stocks and you have to sell when they're high. It's like when you're always complaining every week. You complain about how people email you and they send you tweets and they say, let's trade one of our really terrible players for a player who's really good at another team.
Yes.
But that's not how trading works.
No.
Trading is, you know, you exchange things of similar value. And it's unlikely that people who are engaged in the same profession that you are willing to accept a terrible trade.
Right.
So this is a situation where LA Galaxy, Jesse's never going to be valuable to another team the way he is to the LA Galaxy, which is one reason why, not the only reason why, but one reason why he's probably not going to move, because there is value in having a player who is local, who knows this community, in this community, who cares about this community, and who's committed to it. I mean, he is like a wonderful person. He really is. But if he's a wonderful person, but simultaneously a mediocre soccer player, at what point does the soccer ability outweigh the wonderful intangibles that he brings?
Well, here's the argument for continuing to play him. Right. So, you know, Joe Beth asked why he keeps playing 90 minutes because Siggy is under the belief, and I think it's a correct belief over the years that I've been watching soccer, is that you need a break to go right for Jesse right now. And if you could just get him a little bit hot, if he could just have something, as I think his example was, even if the goalkeeper cleared it off the back of his head and it went into the goal, that would be something that they could build on and do stuff with. This is getting to Jesse. I know it is. I believe Kevin said basically that he was trying to interview Jesse after training this week, and Jesse, you know, declined to talk. You know, basically, you know,
aww.
Yeah, and that's totally out of character for Jesse. So it's getting to him, and I think I like that. Jared pointed out last Thursday that Jesse doesn't get angry, and you kind of want a dude to get angry, right? Every once in a while, you want somebody to like run over to the corner flag after they missed a wide open shot, and like, you know, chop it in half and put a little sticks and build a fire over there, and you know, that type of. You want to see some emotion and anger, and it never looks like the anger boils enough on Jesse, and you want to see that frustration. I think we're seeing that.
But that's not who he is. You also want people to be authentic. Jesse is not an angry person. Like, he is someone who's very internal. I mean, he's very deeply religious. I don't think that anger from Jesse would seem very peculiar, because he's so, I mean, he's honestly so sweet in a way. He's a very naive person. I remember someone asking me once about players going abroad, and I remember saying to them, you know, I don't think that Jesse should go abroad, because putting aside that he's never going to have the value to another team that he has to LA Galaxy, he's also in a way a bit sheltered, or he's, you know, because he's been born and raised here, he doesn't have you know, when he got married at a very young age, had children at a very young age, he's something of a shelter. He's somewhat more sheltered. Whereas if someone said, do you think Sebastian Legette should go abroad? I would say in a hot second. He's been abroad. He's experienced culture. He is sort of a curious person in terms of interested in worldly experiences. And so, you know, you can understand when people say, like, it really depends on the context that the player exists in and their world, whether it is appropriate for them to, you know, go abroad, whether that's right for them. I'm definitely not on the bandwagon that I think that all American players should try to go abroad. If it's not right for you, then no, then don't do it. I don't know if I don't think Giassi should be anything other than Giassi. If he's not prone to anger, that's not who he is. I think that honestly, when he doesn't do well, probably the thing that he is most likely to do is to tear into himself,
right,
and to sit and self-criticize and think of, you know, probably trying to think of all of the things he's doing wrong. And it really hurts me to say that, because I know he probably is eating away at himself, trying to figure out why it's not working and thinking of how he can fix things. And, you know, it's a terrible thing, but, you know, maybe Ziggy can try something else. Maybe there's something we haven't explored that we could try before giving up.
Well, here's the other thing is, we talked about it. The LA Galaxy have a 5% chance of making the playoffs. If they're going to make the playoffs, which I believe Chris Tucker over at Riot Squadcast said that if the LA Galaxy make the playoffs, they're winning MLS Cup, because they'd have to be the hottest team ever to finish the season. And, you know, it's just like, you're just going to roll that right into MLS Cup. He's right, by the way. I mean, it's a correct way of thinking. But, I mean, if that happens, then you're going to need Jossie's artist needs to start scoring goals, because something needs to happen to do this. So this is another reason you just continue to play him. The other part of that is that you only have a 5% chance of winning or making it to the playoffs, right? So it doesn't matter right now. Keep playing him. You want to figure out if he's going to ever fix himself or if he's a lost cause forever. That's why, you know, there's been lots of suggestions, Wendy, that the LA Galaxy, and I'll try to stifle my laughter as I say this, but that the LA Galaxy should go ahead and play all their young players, because they need to figure out what they're doing going into the next year. And my comment is that that's what they did the entire first half of the season. All right, what they need to do now is figure out which of their starters, quote unquote starters, should be starters and which ones they're going to have to replace in the offseason. And trust me, the LA Galaxy, and I had talk with somebody off the record talking about some of these different issues and possible places to upgrade, and everybody knows. Siggy said it. He said, I need a center forward. The LA Galaxy know they need a striker. All right. I don't know that they're going to solve that before the season is over. In fact, they're not. All right. That's just not going to happen. Somebody either has to produce and surprise everybody, or they're going to have to pick up one in the offseason. So they know they need a striker, and they probably know they need a goalkeeper are the two things that the LA Galaxy right now are probably looking at. Overall, though, I mean, if you look at that, and there's some depth players and possibly some veteran additions that you need to make to this team. But overall, the team you see now in the starting lineup should realistically be that team next year, which is either scary, or actually it's super scary, or the team gels down the stretch and I think you see a little bit more what the LA Galaxy are capable of.
Well, I've said it throughout the season. There is enough talent. There is enough talent on the roster to put together a playoff team. There is. And we've had some of these players be injured. Sebastian Legette has been injured the entire season. I can't imagine what the season would have looked like had he had the opportunity to play. Yael Van Dam did not have the year this year that he had last year. If he had produced this year the way he produced last year, would things have looked very different? The fact that we didn't have a functional right back for basically the entire season,
yeah,
I'm sure that played a role in our fortunes and fates. You know, obviously all these things are things we're going to have rolling through our heads towards the end of the season. But yeah, you're right. We need a center forward. We probably need a goalkeeper. We probably need to fill in some other spots here and there. But, you know, hopefully Ziggy can look at this and sort of figure out how he can tweak it, because he's not going to be able to do a full-scale rebuild. That's not something he's going to have the option to do, because we have three designated players for the foreseeable future. We know who they are, and we're not going to be able to change that. And whether you think that's a good thing or a bad thing, whether you think Giovanni Dos Santos is going to work or not work, or his work playing with his brother is going to work or not work, it is what the LA Galaxy have decided to do. So we all better try to pray that it will work.
Well, and it's interesting. Let's talk about one of those designated players, and you mentioned him already. I would just like to remind everybody, Giovanni Dos Santos didn't play in the game against New York City FC. I say that saying that I basically do that to point out that he wasn't playing because I don't think most people even realized he wasn't playing, which is, again, another sort of nail in the coffin that is Giovanni Dos Santos so far this season. I think 6 goals, 1 assist on the season. That sounds okay. But for a guy who was supposed to be the man, and let's be honest with this, Wendy. Giassi's artist was supposed to be one of the guys who scored goals, and certainly he has fallen short of that. Ramon Alessandrini got brought in and was supposed to be a creative force, and he has lived up to his billing, and except for the fact that he's probably exhausted at this point, and he's missing some trainings just to try to rest the body as the Galaxy have 10 days in between their games going on right now through the bye weekend that they have. He has been everything I think the LA Galaxy wanted him to be. There are guys who haven't produced, and one of the guys who makes the most amount of money gets the most amount of blames, and that's Giovanni Dos Santos. He has not produced this year in any sort of meaningful way. The 6 goals are okay. For a guy who you need another 11 goals out of in order to be considered a good season. So he has 11 games. He has to score a goal every single game in order for him to be any sort of, success over the season. So that's what he's looking at right now. But the guy disappears, and I'm jumping on a guy who's injured. That's probably not nice. Plus, he probably doesn't want to carry me around if he's injured. But he's Giovanni Dos Santos has a hamstring issue. He did not play in this New York City FC game. Did you notice anything different with the way the LA Galaxy played?
No, I didn't.
Right.
We didn't create. There's a chance that we could have been more creative if he had been in the field, but I didn't know. I mean, we've talked about this. He ghosts us. Giovanni ghosts us. He's the beautiful woman. We need to woo him. We need to suss out all of his soccer talent. He needs to be in the mood. He needs to want to put out. And if he doesn't want to put out, then he's not going to show up. And if he doesn't show up, you're not going to notice.
Yeah, and how much are you going to get from him down the stretch, knowing the LA Galaxy are basically out of the playoffs? I mean, that's sort of where you sit there. So you got Giovanni Dos Santos. Jonathan Dos Santos. Okay, so 2 games. Seen him play in 2 games. Yes, perfectly good upgrade at that position. If that was a position of need, I would think everybody would be jumping up and down and saying, wow, look, we finally have a central midfielder, which, by the way, you should still be doing. You should still be saying, oh, look, a central midfielder. He loses the ball a little bit. Sometimes he's easy to dribble around, but I think that he will work well with Joao Pedro. I certainly haven't seen, the dysfunction that I have seen at times from Jermaine Jones and Joao Pedro that I saw with Jonathan and Joao Pedro. So those two seem to be working fine. The other guy who sort of gets mentioned in this game is Jermaine Jones. First of all, did you see the picture of his foot after the...
No.
Oh my.
No, why?
God. Oh, you didn't see. So basically, sometime in the first half, he picked up this gnarly gash underneath his big toe. So if you think about your right foot, your big toe, all right, and then come back where the toe meets the foot, all right, and then just open up this giant gash that goes from the left hand side to the right hand side. It looks like I could talk to you. That's how big it was. And he ended up having to get 3 stitches in his foot at halftime. Right?
Said, oh, no.
Yeah, yeah. So he's been out from training. So the guys who have missed training so far, just to give everybody an update, Yelavon Dom did not train. We're going to talk about him in a second. Ramon Alessandrini didn't train. That's fine. Don't worry about that.
He has got to be exhausted. He played. People forget that he came here straight from Marseille.
Yes.
And the Europeans, they play on a different calendar than we do, which means he had played a half a season when he came to start our season. He must be exhausted.
Yeah, I think he is. So you had Ramon Alessandrini who is resting, and he has knee stuff too. So I mean, you want him to be rested. That's fine. Jonathan Dos Santos, I think, went in a little bit early. Gio didn't train. I'm trying to think who else. Baggio was out there running. Jose Villarreal is back to full training. So you're getting some guys sort of coming back, but there's guys they're resting too. So I mean, you look at that. Jermaine Jones did not train, which is what I was trying to get to, I think, eventually. But and that's understandable. And he's probably iffy on whether or not he will be able to play in Columbus just because of where that is located. It would probably have to be taped up and all sorts of things. He said that they numbed it for the entire second half, and so he was running around not being able to basically feel his toe, his right toe. And I don't know, I just had I didn't have a cavity, but they had to do something to one of the surfaces of my teeth, and they had to numb my jaw, and so half my mouth was numb, and I felt like an idiot for the entire day, basically trying to, I don't know how that would feel with when your foot falls asleep and you try to walk on it. How well does that work for everybody?
Yeah, I mean, with respect to Jermaine Jones, I think, buddy, I really think the fates, I think the mystics, the fates, I think Cassandra, I think that the Oracle at Delphi have all essentially made clear that this should be the swan song for Jermaine Jones. I think it's probably time he tied up those laces. We bid him a farewell and he walks off into the sunset, because I do not see how another team could sign him for a year after what happened this year with LA Galaxy.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see if he plays. I will say the one thing, though. I mean, with that nasty injury, Wendy, you would have had to, like, put me, probably knock me out with Vicodin and put me in a corner. and he played a soccer game in which he wasn't horrible. He wasn't great. He wasn't horrible. I think he was probably at fault for the first goal, not staying on his feet. Maybe that had to do with the fact he couldn't feel his foot. I don't know. We'll never know. But Brian Rowe takes a lot of the blame on the first goal. And the second goal, you know, Dava Villa, I don't know what to say about him other than he's really good. Speaking to somebody off the record, they said that they thought that both goals the goalkeeper should have done better on. So, and I don't disagree. We've hammered on Brian Rowe on the Monday show, and certainly I think he deserves some blame. I also wonder how much the whole benching at the beginning of the year with Cardinalfo, and, you know, somebody said, you know, if Brian Rowe is wrecked, it's because we, and he was saying, like, the Galaxy, we wrecked him, right? You know, one of the fans was saying, you know, the Galaxy wrecked him. That's what the problem is, and we need to take responsibility for that, because he was a top three goalkeeper last year. Whether that's just excellent defense, which it could have been, and I certainly think that Yella Von Dom playing to MLS Defender of the Year heights in 2016 was certainly a reason that Brian Rowe was so good, but he was the top three goalkeeper statistically last year, and this year he seems not confident, he seems unsure, and it all seems like it comes down to coaching and confidence, and I'm not sure anything is there, and he may just be broken, and that may just be it, and that's unfortunate, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think that earlier this year when Cardinalfo was saying how he wants competition for all spots, so he's going to play Clement Diop and not Brian Rowe to show them there's a fierce competition between them. I think, you know, a lot of times when people try to take the psychologies of other human beings into their hands, you know, you're just going to wind up screwing with another human being's life and potentially ruining them. So I just think that, I think people who are psychologically unsophisticated should not try to be psychological masterminds and should not try to, you know, manipulate the situation so that they can try to gain some anticipated psychological benefit by play God. And I know coaches essentially do play God, but
yes.
I mean, coaching to some extent, you know, you shouldn't manipulate other human beings in order to try and demonstrate that you have a tactical mind or that you're some sort of brilliant manager of human beings. You know, it's enough to just get the positions right and to, you know, get your trainings right, you know, focus on the basics. And then you can try to be Jose Mourinho or Pep Guardiola, but, you know, to do steps 1, 2, and 3 correctly first. And then you can try and play, you know, pretend to be, you know, Johan Cruyff and philosophize about soccer. So if Brian Rowe is broken, I'm very, very sorry. I feel terrible about it, and I wish that it hadn't happened.
Yeah, it could be. I will say this. It's up to every coach to try and get the best out of their players. If Kurt thought he could push Brian Rowe to be better than he was the year before, and he thought that by doing it, you know, by having Diop push him, you know, a young goalkeeper who was coming up and do those things, I mean, quite honestly, that would be a decision I would make, too. It's sort of like, hey, I don't know that I would have pulled Brian Rowe in that position. And not having ever coached soccer, I don't know that I'm even qualified to have this discussion. But it was one of those things where it's like, you know, this is a bad, bad year for Brian Rowe. There were injuries involved as well this year. Just lots of things have not gone his way. And he was a good, solid keeper. And unfortunately, I think the LA Galaxy have to go out and source a goalkeeper in the offseason. And that's just one of the things this New York City game sort of brought up. So that's it. I mean, the New York City game, 2-0, it was a better showing from the LA Galaxy. I will agree, and I don't care if people don't agree, but at the same time, I will agree that the LA Galaxy probably deserved to win that game. They didn't, because that's not how soccer works or sports work, but I felt like that they did enough on the night to score goals. Maybe it should have been 3-2. Maybe it should have been 2-2. They should have got something out of that. There should have been a ball in the back of the net, but tip your hat to Sean Johnson, who you cannot underestimate in this game. He really did change the face of this game. What are your final thoughts on New York City?
I mean, yeah, if we had Sean Johnson playing for us, then I think we would have won, but we didn't. So, you know, we lost.
That's usually how it works. All right, let's go to another email that we got. And just like a little fun thought experiment that Richard wrote in to us and said, simulation is the title of it. And Richard says, never miss your podcast, Sublime. Love to hear your thoughts on EPL decision to retroactively review simulation and possibly issue a 2-game suspension. I think it's pretty brave, and similar action in MLS would grow the sport in the United States. Well, Richard, the disciplinary committee is actually able to do this. If you remember, Dave Romney actually got suspended for a game because he drew a penalty kick in one of the first games of the season that the LA Galaxy converted because they said that it was simulation or embellishment. The problem that I have with any of this is that it's very hard, and I've seen it now a bunch of times. Sometimes it's super easy to tell simulation on players as they're going, Wendy, and it's super easy to see. You can watch the replay and be like, oh, wow, there was nobody within 3 feet. Yeah, he dove. Super floppy flop. But my problem is when there is actual contact and then people trying to determine whether or not there is contact enough to bring somebody down. And I don't think you can do that in slow motion. And the disciplinary committee has proven time and time again that they're horrible at this particular thing. Again, suspending Dave Romney, there was contact. Is there enough? And the other problem is that referees don't actually call fouls whenever you get kicked and you don't fall down. So if you're a defender or if you're anybody and you're in the box and you get kicked, you should fall down. As a matter of fact, I've seen two or three players not fall down in the box this year in Major League Soccer, not get the penalty kick, and when they were clearly fouled and not get a goal scored. So, if you want to look at simulation, at least in my mind, Wendy, if you want to look at simulation and go back and determine whether or not you think it's simulation, you can do that. But I just think that you're going to find that it's a lot more difficult to tell intent and force, even in slow motion, than it is in real time.
Yeah, I mean, if the MLS disciplinary committee, if I was standing at a crosswalk, and the MLS disciplinary committee told me that the light was green and I could walk, I would turn to the person to my left and say, is it red? Because I think they get it wrong a lot. There's this one thing that I've said, I don't think anyone even disagrees with me. I think the standard of officiating in MLS needs to get better. I don't think this is not a controversial point. No one's gonna come in and tell me that I'm wrong on this, right? I mean, they get things wrong constantly. And I'm not saying that the LA Galaxy are particularly susceptible to this or that it happens more to us than anyone else, but it happens to every team that they get done in by MLS. It's officiating, and it's the disciplinary committee gets things wrong a lot. I don't know if other leagues have to deal with it. I mean, I'm sure every league has complaints about its officials.
Yes.
I can't imagine they're as bad as our officials.
You know, I don't know. I do watch other games, and certainly whenever we watch the World Cup, that's when we're sort of exposed to officials outside. Outside of, you know, your normal league and outside of even the English Premier League. And I have to say that, you know, you get officials, and it's funny because you get officials who, like, don't like any physical contact whatsoever, and that's the league they came from. You get like, physical EPL officials or Major League Soccer officials that let people kill each other, with physical contacts and stuff like that. It's just interesting to see how, you know, some referees pull out the yellow cards right away in their leagues, and some leagues, like Major League Soccer, wait until the last 5 minutes to issue yellow cards.
I'm not saying we have officials like the official who disallowed Maurice Adu's goal at the 2010 World Cup.
Right.
It's not like wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Not like that type of officiating.
Right.
But I mean, obviously our officiating needs to improve, as does everything.
Yeah.
Lots of room for improvement all over the place.
And VAR is attempting to do some of that. I've been a fan of VAR. I do think that it's funny where VAR has so far failed me has been when the officials interpret VAR as some sort of ridiculous thing to right all wrongs. The play in Orlando, and it was Orlando and was it New York? I'm trying to remember it was Orlando and New York over last weekend where Kaká got a straight red card for messing around with Colin. If you see the replay, you can go watch it on MLS. But it's a gross misjustice, and it's a gross application of VAR, and it was hands to the face. It was two guys joking around, laughing with each other, and they ended up giving Kaká a red card. And then Orlando doesn't appeal it. And I have people who, and I'm sorry, but you're idiots, who are on my timeline saying that, they never would have won that because, you know, he did touch him in the face. If you go back and read the rules, it has to be violent conduct. And this is a guy who's not being violent at all. They're joking with each other and having fun and trying to take a tense situation and sort of having everybody laugh and turn around and be like, oh, it's okay. We're fine, guys. There was a little scrum and now we're fine. And that's what VAR does. So again, it's the referee who determines that whether that's a call. You could have just been like, you know, that's not anything there. So again, I think it's the referees that have the problem, Wendy, not VAR or you know, the replays or things that they're trying to do. It's the people interpreting those that I have the problem with.
This is like an analogy to the idea of the internet is neither good nor evil. It's merely an instrument and people use it as they will.
That is exactly what VAR is. Neutral. It's not good. It's not evil. It's a tool. And sometimes the tool is used by tools. I don't know what to tell you. So, all right, let's go on and continue to touch a little bit. I wanted to get to some Yella Von Dom news, so let's do that right now, and I'll sort of jump around a little bit on my topics. Yella Von Dom, here is the latest update, and this is something that came out that I tweeted out, and that is in one of Kevin Baxter's stories after my tweet came out. So between both of us, I think we got this pretty much right on where we're at. And this has changed. This has changed since Monday. It changed on Tuesday. It changed on Wednesday as I did stuff today. So Yella Von Dom did not train with the LA Galaxy this morning. That could be that Yella Von Dom isn't training because he's getting ready to move to Antwerp. It could be that he was working out a deal and packing his things and getting ready to go, and all those things could very well be true. But right now, it looks like the LA Galaxy are trying to get Yella Von Dom to stay for the Columbus and San Jose game. So this is the Wednesday, August 23rd game, and then they play on Sunday, the 27th, four days later against San Jose at home at StubHub Center. So those are the games they're trying to keep him for, and then it looks like they're going to release him to Antwerp. And Antwerp was hoping to have him this weekend playing this Saturday, but that doesn't seem to be happening. It seems like the negotiations are still ongoing. I wouldn't be surprised if I got, a text message while I'm recording the show that says Yella Von Dom is gone, because he has told some people that he's leaving. He has told, I think, some players that he's leaving. There is word around that everybody knows he's gone. I mean, there's nobody who denies that the dude is leaving. Yella Von Dom will not be with the LA Galaxy, whether it's tomorrow or, after the San Jose game. However that ends up happening, he will be departing for Belgium and to go back with his family there. So that is what we know. One of the reasons for the delay, possibly, Wendy, is that it looks like Michael Chiani, who is supposedly the replacement for Yella Von Dom, and we don't know sort of whether or not the LA Galaxy got their sort of half-year contract they were trying for, whether it's going to be an 18-month contract or anything else, or whether this contract even happens. Maybe the LA Galaxy decide after Columbus and San Jose that they don't want to bring somebody in as a replacement because it doesn't matter anymore, because you lost both those games and now you're really out of it. You're not making the playoffs. It's never going to happen. So all those things are sort of up in the air. But if there is some talk that they're delaying this in order to either figure that out for the playoffs to bring somebody in, or in order to bring in Chiani and he would be available and come in to the team at that time when they let Yella Von Dom go. So that's the latest information.
He misses his kids. And yep. So he wants to leave. And so I wish him the best of luck.
Yeah, I mean, somebody asked, and I don't have it, I forget who asked on Twitter, but they were like, hey, on tonight's show, can you tell me how many LA Galaxy captains have been, let go in the middle of the season? And I wrote back and I said, the better question is how many LA Galaxy captains have wanted to leave in the middle of the season? And that's sort of what it is right now. He wants to go, and I don't blame him. I understand how it is. My son lives in Colorado. Thank God it's only like an hour and 20-minute flight for me, or two-hour flight for me to get there and see him on the weekends whenever I can. So that's close enough for me. But for Yella Von Dom, that's like, it's not even like a 6-hour flight, Wendy. It's like an 11-hour flight or 11 and 12-hour flight. And this is a guy who could be playing in Belgium, which he could be just, hours or minutes from his children instead of far away. So it's an unfortunate situation. But somebody said, if the LA Galaxy were winning, would this still have happened?
No.
Maybe.
No.
Maybe.
No.
Maybe. Stefano Shizaki left in the middle of the season.
The answer is no.
I see, and I disagree with that. I think it's maybe, because we don't know. Stefano Shizaki left in the middle of the season. The LA Galaxy have had players leave in the middle of their season and asked to get out of their contracts. This is not the first time it's ever happened. And it was for family reasons for Stefano Shizaki, too. But I tend to lean that, he's a little happier if the LA Galaxy are winning.
So. I think that, as I recall, when Stefano Shizaki left, that it was a mutual arrangement. And that shortly after Ishizaki left, we brought in Giovanni Dos Santos. Is that not true?
I don't think they were like for likes, or I don't think,
but I mean, I see, as I recall, he left and like the following week we brought in Gio or Steven Gerrard. Yeah. I think that's what happened. And that, to me, that indicates, okay, we were making way for him. I don't know if Stefan Ishizaki wanted to leave the way Van Damme wants to leave.
I'll tell you right now, Stefan Ishizaki wanted to leave. He was having, I think his wife was pregnant with twins, and he wanted to be home with family. I remember talking to him whenever he said he was getting ready to leave. He's like, no, this is something I need to do, because they wanted to be around family, and they're like, listen, I'm going to have twins. This is going to be a lot, and I want to be around family. My family's all in, I forget where Ishizaki's from, Sweden?
Sweden.
Yeah, Sweden. And that's where he wanted to go. So he definitely wanted to leave. This wasn't like Mike McGee.
Oh,
hey,
okay.
Hey, you should go to, you really want to go to Chicago, don't you? It wasn't that one. So it was Stefan. He really wanted to go. But Yella really wants to go. I'm not going to besmirch him to do that. All right, let's go on. We'll keep you updated on Yella Von Dam. If things change, we will update you. I the best place is at Galaxy Podcast on Twitter. That's where I have put out all my updates on Von Dam, so that's where you need to be following. And I haven't written an article yet because, you know, nothing has really like settled down and actually been pinpointed about what's going to happen. It keeps changing. I think I've written 3 different articles and none of them got published yet. So we'll get something up on the website as soon as we have sort of a clear idea which direction this is going. But Yella Von Dam could have 2 more games with the LA Galaxy unless he decides to get red carded in the Columbus game. And then, you know, 15 minutes in, Wendy, a 2-footed tackle, and away he goes to Belgium. So maybe he wants to go sooner rather than later. Real quickly, Forbes names the LA Galaxy most valuable franchise in the league, Wendy. This is after Seattle, I think, has claimed it the last 2 years. But they got a 19% overall increase from the year before, and Forbes now values the LA Galaxy franchise at $315 million. Which is a lot of millions. If they just want to share one of those with me, it'd be perfectly. You know what? Half of one would be just fine with me. This comes on $63 million in revenue and $9 million in operating income. All right. So, what do we think about Major League Soccer, Wendy? Whenever you look at the actual chart that shows on here, it shows half the MLS teams in the league were actually have a negative operating income, or at least not a positive one, because San Jose was neutral at zero. But some of the bigger teams, including Toronto FC and New York City FC, are two of the largest operating incomes in the negative there. So what do we think of this this particular report? It comes out every year. It's kind of fun to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, I think I actually have a background in economics, but I think that one thing that which frustrates me a lot is when people confuse the liquid losses in a year with asset valuation, because a team can gain $50 million in asset value over any given period of time, and yet simultaneously lose $20 million in terms of expenditures. It still is actually an increase. It is still a profit, because the asset that you own has appreciated in value. Now, it's something that you can't realize because you haven't sold that asset, so you cannot capture all of that gain. But think of, like, for example, the owner of the Clippers, who bought the Clippers 35 years ago, and then 3 decades later, he sells it and nets himself something like $2 billion. It was a crazy, crazy increase. So that's why people own sports teams. It's not because you make money year over year in terms of revenue. Maybe you do. There are teams that do. But generally, there's a lot of teams. If you look at the NBA, there are teams that come very, very close to essentially breaking dead even, or even losing money in terms of their capital outflow. But the asset values increase in value year over year. This year, the LA Galaxy entered into a contract with the Chargers, who are renting their stadium. That is guaranteed income. It increases the value of the asset because it means that there's they're going to have revenue coming in, which they can rely upon for the next couple of years, I think maybe even longer than the Chargers have announced, which they can rely on, and they can use that to make capital investments. They can renovate the stadium, which is owned by AEG, and therefore goes into the valuation of the team. So when you think of the team's value, that includes things like infrastructure. It includes things not just players, but players included. And it also includes, you know, things, sponsorship deals. It includes a lot of different things. So since the LA Galaxy is in such a lucrative market, it makes sense that they are valued. But I think that it's difficult for fans to really swallow, because we're so terrible right now. And so when you look at it, it's just the fan experience is not commensurate with maybe what the LA Galaxy asset is. And I think that it's probably doubly frustrating because, you know, there's the cost cutting thing and the fact that the beginning of the year, AAG intentionally pulled back in terms of reining in expenditures because I'm sure Phil Angelis rightfully believes that he's invested so much money into MLS over the years that he wants to be able to enjoy a little bit of it. He wants to be able to realize some profit now that MLS has become more successful. But the fact is that fans don't want to hear that their owner, who is a multi-billionaire, is now decided to go cheap on their team.
Yeah. And it's super interesting. These are all 2016 numbers. So none of these numbers reflect anything that has happened this year. That's, you know, all estimates. And granted, these are also estimates that I think most LA Galaxy and most league officials tell you aren't accurate. But at the same time, you know, there has to be a little bit of truth to some of these things. Forbes is pretty good at what they do. And so I think they're pretty close. But it says basically LA Galaxy made, you know, quote unquote, made in quotation marks, $9 million in their operating income, you know, on the positive side, whereas it shows Toronto FC, you know, lost $9 million on their operating side. Again, Wendy, you're absolutely right. The increase in value of Major League Soccer and its franchises basically have increased at a point where the small losses that you're seeing, you know, Toronto FC, $10 million, maybe it's not small, maybe it's a lot, but $10 million is being realized on still a positive in the overall, you know, increase of what the asset is worth. So Toronto FC is now valued at $280 million, you know, and before they may have been, you know, at $260 million. So they lost $9 million, but they gained, you know, a $10 million or $11 million on top of that in terms of the asset value. So that's sort of the interesting thing. I'll tell you, it spans across everything where the Chicago Fire lost $7 million last year, if you look at sort of their operating income. But again, this seems like it's actually a pretty healthy league in terms of how it's going. And somebody did a chart, and I saw it on Twitter. It was super interesting. They said the 20th ranked team in the EPL, okay, so basically the last place team in EPL, what the value of that asset was. And so they sort of traced that over the last couple of years. And then they said, you know, and the top rated MLS club, right? And so they showed this chart, and there's these converging lines that happen in the next probably 3 or 4 years, even 5 years, where if everything continues sort of on the trends that everybody sees, that MLS and their top paying franchise will actually be worth more than the last place team in the English Premier League, which is maybe not saying much, or maybe it is saying much, but it's at least a comparison to see sort of why there is always such a hesitancy for pro rel, Wendy, whenever you look at some of the values that are coming here. It's like they would want to, you think the LA Galaxy want to risk their $350 million asset whenever they could possibly be relegated?
Well, also, and this is, there are reporters, very good reporters, who will tell you that MLS is perched very precariously from a financials perspective, and that they need those investments from teams who are buying franchises. Now, there are people on Twitter who will say that makes MLS a Ponzi scheme, but I disagree. I think that it is essentially the equivalent of something that you would make huge capital investments in order to create infrastructure such as stadiums, while losing a lot of money. And MLS has for many, many years, since the inception of MLS, it has lost a lot of money. That doesn't mean that it hasn't gained in value, but I mean, it could be a true statement that MLS is shooting up like a rocket in terms of the asset values that it has, and yet simultaneously pouring money down the drain, losing buckets of money that it's also relying on those investments from teams like LAFC, who are coming into the team, that $150 million or whatever they paid, that they're using that money to finance operations.
Yeah, and Don Garber, in this article, somebody brought that up, and in this article, they actually asked Don Garber about that, and he said that, you know, the expansion fees have never been used in terms of operations. They use it in terms of investment back into the infrastructure, like you said, but not on the operation side, that MLS operates operationally separate of those fees. That's what he said. Roughly paraphrased. So it's interesting.
I wonder.
Yeah, this is all wonder. This is all just sort of, the MLS is such a closed league that it's all wonder. It's like, I don't know. I mean, there's no, whenever we get the
number. But also because when I've seen how businesses account for things, and you know, you can allocate something to an operational expense when it's not really an operational expense. And remember how I don't want to get into too much accounting nerd talk for people out there, but there's a lot of assets are depreciated over time when they're accounted for every year. And so I'm sure that MLS depreciates its assets in right. such a way that it realizes the benefits from a tax perspective, and that it makes sense to do that as opposed to allocating it or accounting for it as an operational expense.
There you go. I'm sure everybody hang in there. Stay awake, everybody. We'll hang in.
No. No more accounting talk.
You're absolutely right. And my eyes glazed over because I got thrown back into college, and I didn't want to be there in that accounting class. And so I was still there anyway.
Okay.
So I remember. Last thing that I want to talk about LA Galaxy News, just as sort of as a side, because I think it's humorous. If you go over to cornerofthegalaxy.com, you can read our article where Britt Pergel wrote about JD Power and Associates, says the Galaxy do the best job in SoCal sports. If you look at the survey that they did, and they went out and surveyed 9,000 fans, and basically looking at all the teams in Southern California, that's the Angels, the Lakers, the Ducks, the Padres, the Kings, the Clippers, the Chargers, the Dodgers, and the Rams, that the LA Galaxy came out on top of all those other teams in terms of overall experience and overall range. And somebody said, did they talk to any LA Galaxy season ticket holders? And I said, you would have to imagine that there were probably some in there. And then I was like, they had to have done this maybe last year. Maybe the study when they did it, they actually did it in June. So they did the surveys and stuff in June for the Galaxy side of things. So I would just like to point out that it is out there that they say that the LA Galaxy is better at doing things than the Angels, the Lakers, the Ducks, the Padres, the Kings, the Clippers, the Chargers, the Dodgers, and the Rams. All right. Also on this study, Wendy, I would point out that the Chargers actually rank a little bit higher than the Rams when you look at everything. So it basically went the Galaxy were the tops. The only things they got knocked down for were ticketing and souvenir and merchandise. That's what they got knocked down for.
Souvenir and merchandise?
Yeah.
What's wrong with LA Galaxy merchandise?
Maybe there's not enough of a selection. Actually, you know what? Whenever I was buying stuff all the time, maybe there's not.
Garbage.
So yeah. Oh, well, it's not somebody said, you know, you can't trust the JD. I'm like, is anybody hanging their hat on any of this stuff? Like, nobody's taking this to town. I just thought it was interesting. It's kind of fun. Here are the categories that they got ranked in there. I'll give it to you. Overall satisfaction, ticketing, arriving at the game, security and ushers, seating area and game experience, food and beverage, souvenir and merchandise, and leaving the game. So, Wendy, real quickly, you have to go from 1 to 5 in each of these categories, 1 being horrible, 5 being okay. Here, let's get the Wendy Thomas rankings according to what the LA Galaxy do. Okay, we'll stay away from overall satisfaction. So we will do ticketing, 1 through 5.
Well, what I want us to be able to do is be able to get online tickets, and then we can have them scanned in. I don't know why we have to have hard copies of tickets. You don't have to anymore.
You don't have to anymore. The app actually lets you scan tickets apparently now. There's a new LA Galaxy app. Yeah, yep. New LA Galaxy app.
Okay, so I'm going to give that. Okay, so 1 is the worst and 5 is the best. I'll give it a 3.
Okay, so they gave this a 4 overall. Arriving at the game. That includes parking. It includes getting to the game. It includes getting there.
What? 2.
Okay. Security and ushers.
Because there's this parking lot. That's stupid parking people, and they're always like pointing you go this way.
I know.
Why can't I drive here? I'm supposed to be in lot 12. No, you can't be in lot 12. All right. Okay, fine.
Yeah, I know. Okay. Security and ushers.
They're fine. They're 4.
4. Okay. They got a 5. 5 at arriving the game, too. Seating area and game experience.
Well, we're terrible this year, so how could the game experience be a positive one? I mean, are they saying, like, the look of the stadium or the weather? I mean, it's a beautiful outdoor stadium in terms of, like, the weather, the air is close to the ocean. I mean, all those things are great, but we're terrible. So how could... If it was another year, I would say it's a 5. This year, it's like a 1 because I'm so unhappy.
Well, see, but that is the thing. And J.D. Power even went in there and said they did not ask about, like, satisfaction with the game play because they figured that... Well, no.
Okay.
Wait, stop.
If the gameplay doesn't matter, if you can be miserably unhappy but appreciate the air, then yes, okay, it's fabulous.
No, you didn't let me finish. J.D. Power says basically that they didn't put that into their survey and ask about it because they felt it would be reflected in the overall answer that the person gave. And that is, so that means that if you have not been having a good time this year, then your answers
are
probably...
But it's a 1. Yeah. Okay, 1.
There you go. Okay. Mm-hmm. So they had a 5. Food and beverage. Food and beverage.
Much improved. Much improved. I have to give LA Galaxy where it is due. They have more options this year than they've ever had. They have a wider variety, and they have healthy options, and they have vegetarian options. I have to give them a 4.
Okay, they got a 5. I don't know what they got in souvenir and merchandise. It was one of the ones that they got knocked down. It's like a separate category, but you said that there was nothing wrong with it, so maybe a 4 or 5?
Well, yeah, I mean, the one problem is that you can't go into the store and buy non-big player shirts. That's the big problem, is that I had to have my Sebastian LeJet shirt made this year specifically for me. And, you know, that's a problem.
Right.
But in terms of the quality of the merchandise, it's fine.
All right, Leaving the Game is your final one. Leaving the Game, how is it?
That's the worst one. Well, that's the worst one because you're getting out of the parking lot. And everyone, you know, so, I mean, that's a 2.
Okay, there you go. So they got a 5 in that one. So that's, I just wanted to point out what it was. And yes, there are other teams, like the Los Angeles Rams got a 2 in overall satisfaction. The Los Angeles Dodgers actually got a 2 in overall satisfaction. And most of that was because Leaving the Game, they didn't like the food and beverage at the Dodgers games. The seating area and game...
It depends where you are, because stadiums at the Dodgers, I mean, their food, frankly, I've had Dodgers food. It's nothing right now about.
All right. So anyway, so that was it. I just wanted to point that out. You can go on cornerthegalaxy.com and read that particular article if you want. Real quickly on the schedule here, because we're about wrapped up and done. Wednesday, August 23rd, the LA Galaxy will get back to it. A 4:30 p.m. kickoff time, Pacific time, against the Columbus Crew. The game will be on Spectrum Sportsnet and Spectrum Deportes. We will have a Monday night show, everybody, so we will get you ready for that game, and maybe we'll have a better understanding of exactly what that means in terms of who's going to be available and whether or not Yelena Vondam has gone anywhere yet. Then Sunday, August 27th, is the home game, the last time the LA Galaxy will play against the San Jose Earthquakes. It is a Sunday game, a 4 p.m. kickoff time, nationally broadcast on Fox Sports 1. You have Kansas City away, Houston away, RSL home, then Colorado home, Seattle away, Toronto FC at home, Atlanta away. That's a midweek game, by the way, that they get to go to Atlanta, which should be lots of fun. That new stadium looks gorgeous, by the way, and the pricing in terms of what they are doing for their concessions is kind of amazing. So you should check. It's one of the games that I'm contemplating possibly playing hooky and going to. So September 20th is maybe a game that I have to go cover just to see the new stadium over in Atlanta. So that's it. That's what we have right now. Wendy, is there anything else you want to talk about in terms of LA Galaxy before we sort of get out of here? I mean, you know, it hasn't been great.
I hope everyone has a wonderful weekend.
I see. That's perfect. You know what? I will tell you this, Wendy, that people will probably have a better weekend because the LA Galaxy don't play a game. And if they don't play a game, then they can't lose a game. And if they can't lose a game, then a lot of people won't be as upset as they have been almost every weekend for a long while. So, right?
You are a wise man who always sees the silver lining, Josh.
There you go. So everybody have a great and safe and fun weekend. And hopefully the LA Galaxy can come back against Columbus. Wendy, I'm just telling you, between you and me, if nobody else is listening, I'm feeling positive about this Columbus game right now. For whatever reason, ooh, I'm feeling positive about it. So I don't know. We'll dissect that maybe a little bit on Monday. So, all right, Wendy, why don't you tell people where they can find you, and we will get on out of here.
Oh, you can find me at Corner of the Galaxy Now in American Soccer Now and on Twitter at BardsBlonde.
All right, and if you're looking for me on Twitter, it's at Jay Guessman, JGUESMAN, and of course, at Galaxy Podcast is where you can find us. cornerofthegalaxy.com as well. Head over there. All of the podcasts, all of the articles, all the stories, all of your news right there, cornerofthegalaxy.com. All right? Again, no game this weekend. Everybody have a fun, safe weekend. Relax. LA Galaxy back in action next Wednesday, August 23rd. Jossie Zardes gets a chance to score a goal. It will have been 364 days since the last time he scored a goal for the LA Galaxy in league play. That would be a fun little story to write, wouldn't it? Let's see how it all goes. For Miss Wendy Thomas, I'm Josh Guessman, and you've been listening to Corner of the Galaxy on cornerofthegalaxy.com. Have a great one, everyone.
You've been listening to the Corner of the Galaxy podcast on cornerofthegalaxy.com. You can follow the show on Twitter and Instagram at Galaxy Podcast, and be sure to check out and subscribe to iTunes, Stitcher, and Facebook by searching for Corner of the Galaxy. And for all of your independent LA Galaxy news, discussion, and entertainment, including this podcast, head on over to cornerofthegalaxy.com. Fans, thanks for listening. We ask that you be kind and courteous to your neighbors as you leave the podcast. We thank you for joining us and look forward to seeing you again. Until then, I'm Michael Araujo, and on behalf of the entire Corner of the Galaxy crew, goodbye, everybody.